copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
So maybe just a little adjustment there first, that actually I will be impersonating Morgan's voice here. Not voice, but content maybe is the better word. So we will actually do this together. And it's, I think, on the survey, I'm the one to start. So the theme is scripts for life. And when going into that topic, it is as if the films and other popular media provide us with a script on how to live our lives. We immediately catch the point in this quote from Swedish professor Ola Sigurdsson, don't we? We may even be too familiar with how easily these popular stories grab our imagination and are capable of shaping the ways in which we think and live and even search for hope. As Christians, we are not immune, of course, to the power of the narratives that we encounter in films, television series, etc. We therefore need to listen carefully to what's being communicated in order to affirm everything in this script that is in line with God's story and identify what's in conflict with God's wonderful truth. No story exists neutrally as raw entertainment without reference to cultural beliefs and values, says Christian movie maker Brian Goodawah, who actually is quite a storyteller himself. Well, we all tell our own stories, don't we? And we listen to stories. Why? Because we need them in order to make sense of our world and our lives. Folk tradition and official religion used to be the key provider of such stories. But in our media-saturated world, many stories are provided by popular culture. So when Anne Solfeld and Margon carried out a survey in Norwegian schools recently, young students said, I prefer watching movies and television series that I can relate to, especially when life is tough. So she was searching for meaning in fictional stories. So many people actually do the same as this Norwegian student, searching for answers to deep questions in the stories of popular culture, rather than in God's story. They do so out of many different reasons, one of them being the power of the moving image. As stated here, we can see that from the slide, as stated 109 years back. Since the powerful stories on the screen explore existential questions, they offer vital material for our meaning-making processes. Thus, they hand over material for religious socialization, as Swedish sociologist Mia Lövheim puts it. Or as we would put it, the stories are vital to worldview formation. Our kids get so much input from stories in the media that we have no choice but to relate these stories in faith education, both in church and at home. In all stories, there are traces of worldviews. Just by watching the way of living above the surface, we can identify traces of worldviews below the surface. That is, underlying views of ethical values, views of humanity, views of reality, and views of faith. And we then talk about faith understood as trust and search for meaning. A worldview can be described in different ways. And here is a well-known definition by the late American author and apologist James Sayer. A worldview is a commitment, a fundamental orientation of the heart that can be expressed as a story or in a set of presuppositions. That is, assumption which may be true, partially true, or entirely false, which we hold consciously or subconsciously, consistently or inconsistently, about the basic constitution of reality, and that provides the foundation on which we live and move and have our being.
We see how story is part of this definition, as well as commitment and foundational orientation of the heart, which point towards faith, a search for meaning, as a key worldview element. We will always meet these film stories at different levels, either we have reflected on it or not. But to really understand what they are saying, we need to be more structured in our approach. Therefore, we will now focus on four levels. Let us try to illustrate by looking briefly at the movie Wonder from 2018. This is a story about 10-year-old Augie, who has a syndrome which makes his face deformed. The first question we often ask after a movie is, did you like it? And the answer is just as often rooted in our emotional response, what I felt. The emotional impact needs to be processed both individually and collectively. The key question is to always ask why. Let's look at Wonder. The little boy lets you feel his pain, his fear, and his courage. He makes you cheer for him. You can feel the struggles of those around him. So many would say that they were touched and encouraged by the movie. But others would say that the story is too clean. Everything works out. It doesn't resonate with real life. And so the movie is deemed good or bad. The emotional level is often connected to the aesthetic level. All the bits and pieces that tells the story speaks to us. The use of colors, lighting, shadow, music, use of cameras, and so on. Our emotions are led in a certain direction. If the aesthetics doesn't work, it's harder to believe the story. In Wonder, we meet the story that is in warm colors. The lightning is golden. That makes us feel that we can trust the parents. They want everything good for Augie. The camera angle from the roof when he enters the school building is from the top down. It is showing how small Augie feels, and it leads our emotions. These two first levels from the preparatory stage, they need to be taken seriously to understand the deeper layers of the movie. The next level is the analytic stage. From the perspective of worldview theory, beginning by observing what's going on in the story. What are the characters saying and doing? I find that often commentators from a Christian tradition stops by observing the values that can be identified. This is important, but we have to do as Lars demonstrated with the iceberg model, to go deeper, to see what the dialogues and actions point to regarding the underlying worldview or worldviews. We have to ask ourselves, not just about ethical values, but also about the views of humanity, the views on reality and faith. The worldview elements point towards worldview traditions and trends. In Wonder, we see the view of humanity. It's consistent with both secular humanism and Christianity. All but two characters says that every person has the same value. In other worldviews, his facial deformations might have been considered a punishment for something he or his parents had done. His condition might have been connected to guilt or shame. It's not in the movie. When we have gone through all of these levels, we are able to identify points of contact and points of tension in the fictional universe when compared to central proposition in Christian faith, the story with a big S. In Wonder, from a biblical perspective, we can affirm the unique value of every human life, the need for forgiveness that the film displays. But the Bible can also explain why we believe every human life is precious and that forgiveness is needed for everyone. What we have just illustrated is that what the well-known theologian and author John Stott called double listening. Here's a quote from him that explains this expression. We listen to him in order to believe and obey what he says. We listen to the modern world not in order to believe and obey what it says, but in order to understand its cries of pain, the sighs of the oppressed. And it seems to me that relevant communication grows out of this process of double listening.
So this leads us to the first breakout session together. And here are two questions for our discussions. It's natural to start with a short personal introduction, who we are, where we live, and what is our main passion when it comes to living with the media as a Christian. And then just a short discussion. What messages do you find most challenging in typical media stories where you live and where you work and where you find yourselves when it comes to Christian worldview formation? So, thumbs up and thumbs down. That is used in so many different contexts and therefore carries with it a lot of connotations. Still, it's very handy, if I may use that pun, to use this tool when talking about films and other stories with young children and even with older ones. It's such a good entrance point for media awareness. Starting with the emotional, the immediate response, and then the question, why? It has actually been quite a few wow experiences, both for Margan and myself and for the parents when doing this in church settings. As a moderator, though, one needs to be prepared for surprising answers from the kids, of course. But most often, the surprise is linked to quite deep reflections from young viewers. As for instance, when watching Disney's Moana, one may get to hear, I liked how Moana helped her people, but not how her grandma supposedly lived on to help Moana. Only God can do that. But what a serve in order to carry on the conversation. Quite often we find that time and context allow for a bit more than the two thumbs. Thus, we develop from two thumbs to the five fingers. It is still a very simple tool, but it gives a bit more help to reflect. Actually, starting with the little finger, giving the kids some hints when trying to identify the overall response to the film. Is it funny, exciting, scary, sad? The why helps to identify some of the tools that the filmmaker uses to arouse our emotions. The ring finger may be hard sometimes. How to single out what I enjoy the most. A very good exercise. As for the long finger, relating to anything that one does not like, is the same aspect as the second thumb, of course. But the forefinger draws the attention to a new aspect. Whom would I like to be in the story? And why? Not the least, the why opens up for deeper conversations, as do the thumb. Here one hears the echo of what would Jesus do, of course. This is a good way of illustrating that Jesus is interested in all areas of life. Young and old are disciples 24/7. It also draws the attention to the aspect of affirming everything that is true, noble, right, pure, admirable, excellent, or praiseworthy, as Paul says in Philippians 4. And finally, by bending the thumb and hiding it under the other fingers, one gets an illustration of how Jesus is the center of it all. Movie nights are popular in youth groups and are golden opportunities to build a bridge between the Bible and their world, so to speak, as well as helping the youth realizing that being a disciple includes watching films with discernment. We now think of mainstream films, of course. We also want to make sure that we make choices that are well thought through. Whatever set up for the movie night, we should leave time both for a short introduction and for some discussion afterwards. And if at all possible, we should try to move from emotional aesthetical to values and worldviews, and then from values and worldviews to the normative level in your questions. Sometimes choosing a highly popular film is great. Then one may move from what's being communicated in the film to what the Bible says about it. Or you may want to choose a particular film because the story either opposes or illustrates the theme that you want to highlight. The key question always is being, what can we affirm and why? What do we need to challenge and why?
We have tried to give you examples for use of movies in different settings, like in the family and in the youth group and in the Bible study group. This could be done in multiple ways, but it's an ideal arena for a movie night. One, it opens up possibilities for everybody to engage, not just the theologians, the teachers, others that normally likes to listen to their own voice. Second, it opens up possibilities for people to share personal stories from the perspective of emotional reactions. Thirdly, it provides opportunities for engaging with traces of worldviews, making the teaching more contextual and possible to relate to. And fourth, it provides opportunities for practical apologetics, engaging with the answers the movie gives. And just like in the youth group, there are a few things to keep in mind. Remember to introduce a framework for the movie. Be prepared. Read about the movie, the director, the background. Introduce it. Maybe into a few themes that are important. Prepare questions. Identify points of contact and points of tension. And for the conversation, remember all of the levels. Try to cover them all before jumping to the theological response. Give everybody a chance to speak. Don't interrupt. And remember that in a Bible study group, one needs to be able to trust each other. Remember what Lars started with. In our media-saturated world, many of the stories we use to make sense of the world and of our life are provided by popular culture. But these stories are often used as an escape as well. The survey Margin and I did among young students revealed that many choose fictional stories that are far from their own life in order to forget and to dream. And these stories do not necessarily give them the tools to handle their own life, their situation. This is one of the reasons why film is a tool that can be used from the pulpit to build a bridge, to affirm and to challenge, yes, even to demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God, as Paul says in 2 Corinthians. This can also be done in several ways. I have found it helpful to just tell the story from the film, or just to use a still image as an illustration, or even for the audience to reflect on. And of course, we can use a clip or a scene from a movie, keeping in mind the copyright issues. This picture you see on the slide is from a scene, maybe it's well known for many of you. It's from Avengers Endgame from 2019. It is a kind of scene that I have had to wait for a few months before using. It spoils the ending. There's a whole hashtag thing going on with don't spoil Endgame. I won't do that. Tony Stark is giving a short speech to his family and friends. We ought to have looked at this scene through the lenses of all four levels we mentioned. But as for now, let's just look at one quote. Everything is going to work out exactly the way it's supposed to. How can he know that? Who controls what is going to happen? A cosmic force? And what about us if Stark is right? Do I have free will at all? And does it matter what I do at all if everything is controlled? The end will be as it's supposed to be. There are so many questions and so many possibilities to point to the Bible, to God's great plan, and that the way it's supposed to involves a cross, a grave, and a resurrection. This speech, the whole of it, is going to be the case for the next breakout room session. Lars will read the full speech, and when he does, consider these questions. Can you identify any traces of worldviews in this speech? If so, which ones? And how could this speech be used as a point of contact when sharing the gospel? So, Lars.
Everybody wants a happy ending, right? But it doesn't always roll that way. Maybe this time. I'm hoping if you play this back, it's in celebration. I hope families are reunited. I hope we get it back and sometimes something like a normal version of the planet has been restored, if there ever was such a thing. God, what a world. Universe, now. If you told me 10 years ago that we weren't alone, let alone, you know, to this extent, I mean, I wouldn't have been surprised. But come on. The epic forces of dark and light that have come into play. And for better or worse, that's the reality Morgan's going to have to find a way to grow up in. So I thought I'd better record a little greeting in the case of an untimely death on my part. I mean, not that death at any time isn't untimely. This time travel thing we're going to try and pull off tomorrow, it's going to be scratching my head about the survivability of it all. Then again, that's the hero gig. Part of the journey is the end. What am I even tripping for? Everything's going to work out exactly the way it's supposed to. I love you, 3000. Okay, so that was the speech. And could we go back to the questions just briefly? Can you identify any traces of worldviews in this speech? If so, which ones?